Welcome to the Pata Martins podcast. My name is Céline Terranova. I'm an author and brand new podcaster here to help you in your creative career. This show is all about advice, support, and inspiration for performers, writers, musicians, and any kind of artist. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Part-Time Artist Podcast, episode 5 already. Today, my guest is Mia Hoke. She's a painter who's completely self-taught, and she's super inspiring. We talk together about selling your art, facing failure, and minimalism as a lifestyle. But before the interview, as usual, let's talk about the latest news for the Part-Time Artist. The biggest news is my first course that went live a couple of days ago. The course is called The Secret to Attracting Fans, and it's meant to help you grow your audience, so get more followers, more readers, listeners, fans, depending on your art field, without burning out. Because it's quite an issue when you're trying to grow your audience, going on social media, building a website, doing a mailing list. All that takes time. So my course is not only about growing your audience, but it's also how to do it in a sustainable way. And the best part is, it's a free course. It's free, completely. I'll put the link in the show notes, but you can find it on the website already. And it only takes an hour to complete. And by the end, you'll get a full strategy to grow your audience at your own pace. So I hope you give it a try. On the website, I have also started a series of articles that are book reviews. I read tons of non-fiction books, and I wanted to have the opportunity to talk about the best ones, the ones that really inspire me, the ones that make me feel better about myself, the one that help me in my art or in my business, and the ones that I think you should read too. So I started with one of my absolute favorite nonfiction books, the one that I always read when I need a little boost in my life. It's called How Life Works, and it's written by an Australian writer and comic book illustrator named Andrew Matthews. And I read it actually not long ago again. I kind of read it every year or so, and I think it was the best time to talk about it. Now, honestly, it's just a book that you have to read. It just talks about so many important and interesting concepts. Now, if you read the blog, you'll see all the reasons why, but honestly, just check it out. Check it out. This book is awesome. Right, that's all for this week. Let's get on with the interview. I wanted to talk to you about my Patreon page because there are more episodes of the podcast there, only available for my patrons. The latest episode talks about imposter syndrome. I really enjoyed recording it. It was really interesting to talk about not only where it comes from and who is impacted by it, but also how to fight these kind of faults. And it was really interesting to just research and talk about it in a longer form than what I do usually in my blog. So if it's something that would interest you, you can have access to these special episodes if you become one of my patrons. To do that, head to my Patreon page, patreon.com/thepartimeartist, and pledge for one of my monthly tiers. It's super easy and you can stop at any point. And if you become one of my patrons, you can also have a say in what I will talk about in the special episodes. So I hope to see you there. So today I am with Mia Hoke. She's an artist and she's a fantastic person. I'm so happy to have you with me on the podcast. Welcome.
Thank you.
So if you can introduce yourself to the listeners who might not know you.
Yes, so I'm Mia Hoke. I'm an artist, mainly a painter, but I also do illustration.
And how did you get into painting? What's your background?
It came about a little bit randomly. So I used to do a lot of drawing when I was a kid. You know, you would sit and watch Disney films and then draw Disney characters. I sort of stopped when I was a teenager to focus on other things and went to university and then sort of picked it up in sort of early mid-20s again, a little bit by random. And then I sort of decided, oh, yeah, I could probably do something with this. I could do some animal illustrations or something. And then I kind of remembered how much I love painting and started doing, at first not much, but a little bit more sort of fine art portraits, that sort of thing. I was mainly still illustrating animals, designing t-shirts. And then, yeah, about 4 or 5 years ago, I kind of made a bit of a decision to like, okay, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to have to do this properly. And then I started painting bigger paintings. And then, yeah, starting to focus more on that and less on the illustration. And then now, hopefully, I will focus more and more on the painting and less on the illustration side of things.
That's so interesting. So from what I understand, you didn't do any fine art school, any art school at all? Or did you do something in the art industry before?
So as a painter, I'm completely self-taught. I bought a lot of books, watched a lot of YouTube tutorials. I kind of always know what it is that I want to create. And so if I've got a vision of something, it's just a matter of like, how do I make this happen? And then sort of finding the skills. So like, if I was trying to paint hair, I was like, you know, looking through tons and tons of YouTube tutorials of how do you paint hair? And then I'd practice it and then hopefully, you know, get good at it. And then, that was a learned skill. I studied as an actor first, and I worked as an actor in mainly in theatre and sort of doing family shows for a few years, and before I decided to go full-time as a painter and artist.
Wow, that's awesome. What made you change from acting to full-time painting?
There was many, many reasons. This part of theatre that I really love, like I really love the people that you meet there. I love sort of digging into plays and I love exploring text. I love creating plays. But there was definitely certain lifestyle things I found being an actor to be quite strenuous in that sense. I was really frustrated about other people having to hire me to do the work. I felt like in the painting and illustration, I more could have my own vision and work towards that rather than sort of waiting to be a part of something. I could create something for myself. Although it mightn't have been a lot in the beginning, it was also like by trading at markets and that sort of thing, I knew I had some sort of steady-ish income every week, although it was very little. So it's a few things like that. I think also I am very much a person who's guided by my own vision of things. And so I like making the vision rather than just being part of someone else's vision, if that makes sense.
Absolutely makes sense. I've had performers on the show before, which we talked about this frustration of always having to wait until someone picks you.
Yes.
Even if you want to do this and everything. And it's very difficult in the acting world to create your own luck because you need quite a lot to get a show running or to get a film running. So I completely get that. You wanted to just get your vision out there. Absolutely.
And I think as well, it's like that, or you have to start your own theatre company. I mean, there's plenty of opportunity to make your own work in the theatre world as well. But, you know, it does take you on a completely different path rather than if you just want to be an actor.
Hmm. So. And you started your business, your artistic business, from scratch, completely self-taught, which I think is amazing.
Thank you.
So what do you do exactly now to make money, to make your business going?
I do several things. I started out selling at Brick Lane Market. I've recently stopped selling there, but I still sell at markets in London. And that has been a big part of my, that is usually a big part of my income. I also sell online from my website and I sell through Etsy, although the Etsy stuff, I probably become a bit lazy with it, but I don't earn as much as I used to. I'm really happy that I am selling a lot more original artwork. So I'm actually earning not maybe perhaps enough to make a full living of just selling original paintings, but I'm selling them for a lot more. So that's very positive. I do commission work, so I don't do a lot of commission work. I don't like doing commission work unless I get a lot of artistic freedom, which I've been lucky with so far. So yeah, commission work, market work, selling online. I sell prints of my artwork, and I'd probably say I make more money of selling prints than I do of selling my original artwork. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
That's very impressive, and I'm sure a lot of artists out there, they are trying to get commissions, they are trying to get their art selling online or in markets, and it's not easy thing to do, so
no.
What were the most difficult steps actually about getting that business going?
Okay, so I am a creative. I'm a painter. I would consider myself good in terms of as an artist. I think I create, you know, good quality work. However, as a business person, I'm not great, and I'm not going to lie about that. You have to have a completely different mindset. You have to have other interests, which is to make money. And that is often kind of a jarring thing to what you want to make. So it's sort of, yeah, the hard thing for me was, how do I actually make money out of this? I think my method, which is basically like, I just persist. So I will just suffer and persist. That is basically like my tactic in life, is like, I want something. Okay, I don't know how to do it. And if I don't know how to do it, I will like force myself down that path until I figure out how to do it. So I think the biggest lesson for me has been like, you know, figuring out, how do I make things that sell? Mm-hmm. I think it's a huge difficulty in the beginning if you don't have a natural, you know, if you don't naturally know those things, it's very hard to figure out. And I think for me, what just has worked is basically just creating a lot of images, seeing what sells, and then weeding out what doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just basically been a slow sludge throughout the years of trying something new, losing a lot of money on it. It's very devastating in the beginning, but you kind of get used to losing money after a while, you know. And then you go, oh yeah, this design really sells, cool, okay, that's one to keep. And then all of a sudden you've got like a bank of images that, you know, you know like, okay, if I go to this market, those are going to sell. You know, so that's been my tactic, and I am sure there are so many better tactics out there, but that's the one that's worked for me, so.
It's really trial and error, and just trying to see what is commercial, I put that in quotation marks, like what sells better than other things. Yes. Now, I know that there's a prejudice, actually, against, you know, becoming a business person about your art. How did you deal with that?
I think I was, you know, definitely wanting to keep my own integrity in the beginning, and like, yeah, I don't know, there's several ways of looking at it. To be honest, I think be very clear with yourself, that's the main thing. Be very honest with yourself, what it is that you want. Be very clear about yourself, what your own values are. I think that way as well, that you need to have that sort of, be grounded in yourself and your own values in order to be able to take criticism and be able to face a lot of like the general public, which have no idea what it is that you do, and complain about, why do you sell this t-shirt for £25? And immediately when somebody asks you that, you know, okay, this person has no idea what this is about. Either I can try and you know, tell them about what I do and why it is the way that is, or you just let it go. But anyway, that was a tangent. How do I overcome that? I think I want to make money doing what I love. That is important to me. And I don't feel ashamed saying that. Sometimes you have to make a few choices in order to do that. And you have to be sort of very clear about yourself. What do I feel comfortable doing? Like, how far does that work? You know, how far can I stretch being commercial while still staying within my own integrity? That's been really important for me. And I think now I'm more and more finding a sort of balance that really works for me. If you just, like, if you completely immerse yourself in, like, I'm going to make a design that sells. I've done that a few times and I've been absolutely miserable. You pick at the design and you go, are people really going to like this? you know, oh, I don't know, is that colour really good? And, you know, you ask other people and people will give you so many different opinions, you have no idea which one to trust. No, I don't know, I lost a lot of passion working that way. I lost a lot of, I just hated designing for a while because I was like, oh, but people don't like lions. I'm not going to, you know, people do like lions, but, you know, as an example, I'd make something that I thought was fantastic and then it wouldn't sell. And then I'd be like, oh, I only have to make things that I don't like in order to make money. And I don't think that's true. Secondly, like, let's just dispose of the whole being ashamed of wanting to make money out of something you love. Like, money isn't necessarily a bad thing. Money is a tool like anything else. And I'm not going to feel ashamed about wanting to make, like, a good life for myself, essentially.
I completely 100% agree. I mean, there's this misconception, and once you become commercial, you kind of become this sleazy business person who doesn't care about the art. And I don't agree at all, because the purpose of making money is to continue making the art. Because if you don't make the money, that means that you have to take a day job. That means you have less time to make your art. Well, if you make money with your art, you have just more time to do it.
Well, I think my way of finding a way around that as well is like, especially in the new year, I started painting in a bit of a different way. And the idea that I wanted with the paintings was to essentially make something that has a commercial value. Like, so before I'd painted quite realistically, like in my fine artwork, and I'd painted quite sort of, I suppose, raw thematics, and they'd used a lot of time painting it as well. And people really enjoyed the paintings. They really thought, you know, they're good paintings. It's just a matter of there was very few people that actually wanted to buy the prints to put on the walls. So although I got lots of compliments, which is really lovely, and people really like, oh my God, I really connect with this, and, you know, but nobody wanted to actually buy it. So that was an issue for me. So what I wanted to do was, you know, just ask yourself questions. A part of being a creative and being a creative business person is, you know, finding solutions to things and not being completely like a metalhead of like, this is how I want it, and if other people don't like it, them, you know. I think it's like, you got to be creative in the way that you approach things as well. So for me, I was like, okay, how can I create pictures that still have my artistic integrity that people want to buy, so we get the best of both worlds? And I think I'm starting to sort of find a style where that is possible.
Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like a crossroad between your inspiration and also what other people are going to react to enough to buy, basically.
Yes. It's also an interesting conversation to have, like, why are we making the artwork? Is it, you know, like, make some pieces for yourself, by all means, or use it as therapy. Like, what, do whatever you want with your artwork, is basically. But if you are going to say, I want to be an artist who makes money out of what I do and actually makes a living, then, you know, you got to ask yourself a few different questions, I think, and try and find a good middle way.
Mm-hmm. Actually, it goes well into the next question that I was going to ask, because you said that you have changed a little bit the style of what you're doing. Has your process also for painting changed since you started?
Yes, so, well, it's sort of slowly evolving. So I think beforehand, when I started out, and I mean, I didn't have the skills that I have now, by all means. Like, if you look at the stuff that I was selling in the beginning, it was just a little bit crap. And luckily, I've gotten a lot better since then. So for me, it's been a continuous sort of journey of discovery. But yeah, the main thing, I think my perception has shifted. Like, I'm not so concerned about being viewed as a skilled and talented artist. I really don't care. Like, there's going to be not a million but thousands of people that are more talented than what I like, than me. There's always going to be some child prodigy like popping up somewhere, so I'm like, well, I'm already losing that battle. What's the point of being viewed as a really talented person? I don't really care. And that kind of came from me of using that photorealism, was like, I want to prove that I'm good at what I do. And I think that priority for me now is sort of shifting to actually being able to express something fairly complex, and being able to express shape and form in a very simplistic way is actually a much more difficult skill, I find, rather than like depicting something with like complete accuracy. So I don't know, my attention has sort of shifted of that, need to like prove that I'm a skilled artist to the idea and the composition and the sort of feeling and expression of the picture, which is much more interesting in my opinion.
I can see totally that when I watch when I look at your paintings, it's like the subject is gonna come out of the of the frame, and as I feel like, especially your more recent ones, it really looks like exactly what you are trying to do. And I think the passion that I can hear, and I think the listeners can hear completely, it really comes across when we look at what you're doing. And I think more and more you're coming into yourself, and that's what I can see me as a non, you know, fine art person at all. But I think as an artist, I can completely understand that it's just getting there more and more and more without filters.
Yeah. And also I think I see myself quite lucky. So I stopped being an actor, but a lot of the training that I used for like in theatre, I use in composing the pictures and in painting them. So for example, like I remember training in theatre, and it's a lot about, you know, where do you want the viewer to look, where on stage, how do you pull focus to that area of it, and why do you want to pull focus, what is more important, what are you trying to say, and how to most effectively say it. It's like, I think a good piece of theatre, like, it contains kind of a really complex amount of information, but delivered really in a really simple way. That's when you know, but like when everything fits together and the sort of symbology and everything just kind of flows effortlessly. So I feel like that's kind of a principle that I've taken to the paintings in terms of painting some things very realistically and then leaving whatever I can sort of undone, because it doesn't, like, your mind always knows what that is supposed to be. Like, maybe I don't need to tell you what that is. I don't need to spoon feed you the information. You know, draw the focus where you want it to be and then leave the rest as it is.
It's very funny because when you say that, that's also the kind of things that we say as a writer. Mm-hmm. So it's like every art, you have that kind of, the skill is not to give too much, to give just enough so that people are just happy to get the clues out of it. Yes. And you do that in writing too. I'm sure you do that in other types of art too.
Yeah, I think it's like people like to work a little bit as well. Like, don't treat people like they're stupid. Like, you know, give them the opportunity to use their imagination and give them the opportunity to, you know, that's why people love reading. It's like, because your book is completely different from my book. We're reading the same thing, but our imagination is imagining it in completely different ways. And I think that's kind of the lovely thing about that.
Absolutely, completely agree. Now, I discovered you because you were featured in some videos where you showed the van that you completely transformed to transport your art, to go to a different market. Now, I encourage people to go and watch these videos because it's so impressive to me that you just took that project. You were just like, yeah, I need a van to be able to go to these markets, to be able to transport the big frames of the paintings, and I'm just going to transform it. Can you tell me more a little bit about the process that made you do that?
Yeah, it was a bit of a so I am also a very enthusiastic climber, and in that so there's a whole sort of lifestyle around the climbing community, and that I absolutely completely fell in love with. And yeah, I had a lot of friends that did van conversions there, and I sort of saw them and how well that was sort of working out for them. And yeah, I needed to get a van to be able to move around a bit more and sort of expand rather than being stuck to just one place. And the idea was to then create a camper van that I can use for both like the market work, so I can load it full of stock and t-shirts and whatnot, and also that I can go on like longer trips. So for example, I spent 2 weeks in Wales. I brought with me all the stuff that I needed, just kind of, you know, parked up where I wanted, and then had my paintings with me as well, so I get to sort of do work. And and also it's about sort of living a lifestyle that I more enjoy doing, which is more sort of that minimalism and being closer to nature and, yeah, just doing things a bit simpler, I guess.
That's so impressive. And I completely understand that it also helps with inspiration. Because you could go anywhere with all your material and just like find something that you find inspiring or someone that you find inspiring and just start painting it.
Yes, absolutely. In terms of how the conversion and stuff, I had no idea what I was doing. honest to God, I bought two guidebooks. I watched some YouTube videos, and I figured I can do that. I didn't have my license when I bought the van either. So that was a bit of a...
Really? It was... Oh my God.
I knew kind of what length and size I wanted the van I didn't have any money at all either. So it was about finding the cheapest, best van that I could that was that size. So I just kind of looked through Gumtree for a few weeks and then saw one that seemed ideal. Rocked up and he took us for a spin in it. I had somebody a friend who was a bit new some stuff about vans apparently. He was like, yeah, it looks all right. I was like, put myself in the driver's seat, had an absolute anxiety attack. I was like, I have no idea what am I doing, why is this a good idea, I have no idea. So whilst I was still absolutely petrified, I just kind of went, yeah, I'm gonna take it. And I just handed over the deposit for the van and he had to drive it. He had to drive it back to to where I wanted it parked because I didn't have the license yet. But I was like, right, this means I'm gonna just have to pass that practical driving test then.
Yeah, no choice, no, not anymore.
Absolutely, and that's it was an intense learning curve. I'm happy I did it. It was definitely intense and it was long hours and it was really hard work. Luckily, I had a lot of really good friends sort of help me out with sanding things and helping me cut things and paint things and do some tasks like that. So
that's super impressive. I mean, just thinking, for me, I love everything DIY, but just for me to take that's such a big project and be confident, even though I'm sure it's like anxiety confidence, I don't have a choice, so I have to do it, and just do it. And now I've seen the van and it's amazing.
Thank you. I think the biggest thing was just learning small things, like learning how to build in a space that doesn't have any straight walls, because the whole van is curved. Like, that brought up so many problems that I'm now aware of, but if I knew it beforehand, besides from that, learning how to do the electrics was a bit of a mind bender for me. But I think once I learned those kind of things, then the worst was sort of... Yes.
That's completely amazing. And I'm sure it's changed a lot in your lifestyle, when you can have the freedom of going somewhere and just get inspired with some place or some people. It must have changed a lot your artistic life.
I think just the doing the van and stuff, it was more about... I think it just changed my mindset rather than maybe the way that I do things. I kind of realized, especially after doing a lot of trips in it, it's like you really don't need a lot to be able... I got rid of so much clothes. I got rid of so much tat. And just, because I was like, do you know what? I don't need all this stuff. I don't really... And it was just causing me stress, actually. I was like, oh my God, there's so much stuff and what to do. Do I actually need it? And what is it for? And then I realized, I don't need this. It has a bit of sentimental value, some of it, but yeah.
And has that kind of minimalism mindset changed also the way you paint?
Maybe. I think what I'm always trying to do is simplify things, finding ways of how can I achieve a lot more with doing a lot less sort of thing. And I think actually being able to sort of distill things is a real skill, and it's something that I try to do in terms of now I try and not, I used to print my own t-shirts and stuff because I thought I was saving money, and actually when I look at the time that I used for it and the amount of mistakes that I did, and I was like, do you know what, if you outsource this, it would just be so much easier, rather than, it's just things like that. It's like, is it actually cheaper doing it yourself? Or if I just pay somebody to do this, I'll have the time and I can produce work in that time that actually pays for that. So, it's just a couple of things like that, kind of going, okay, how do I actually make this the most productive, and how do I make life the most comfortable for myself in terms of not overloading, you know, as a self-employed, I'm sure you can appreciate being drowned in all the small tasks.
Absolutely.
And sort of getting a bit too detail-oriented and a bit like, oh my God, I need to fix this, I need to fix that. Oh no, I forgot to respond to that email. Oh no, I need to make this. And oh God, there's that event going and I don't know what to do. And, you know, you just get completely overwhelmed. So I think, yeah, trying to have a bit more of a simplistic mindset is definitely a good thing.
that's a big inspiration for me, because I'm drowning into details and everything. So I think if I can take a little bit of an, you know, inspiration from you, that would really make my life much easier. Now, if you have any piece of advice for the listeners, maybe listeners who are thinking about taking the leap, becoming a full-time artist, or just want to just do what you do.
Well, what kind of advice? There's several, I think there's several different pieces of advice depending on sort of where you're at and what it is that you want. I always tend to go a little bit intense when people ask me for advice, because I kind of like, you know, it is an immense privilege. Like, we are incredibly privileged, and I feel very privileged to be able to do what I do, to be able to so freely, you know, pursue what it is that is my passion. But I think there's also a lot of sacrifice in that. So I think it's easy to look at people that perhaps it looks like, oh my God, they have their dream job and stuff like that. But the reality is often, you know, working 60-hour work weeks and not getting everything done, sacrificing a lot of time, being really, you know, learning how to persist is one thing. I think, you know, being really honest about yourself, how you deal with failure, how you deal with those things. I think, yeah, it's just things like that. It's sort of like, you know, whatever works best for different people, obviously. Some people have it easier and say, oh, I'll just give this a go, I'll give myself 2 years, and if it doesn't work out, that's fine, you know. I mean, for me, that was never an option, because I'm like, I really want to do this and I need to do this. And that is definitely what my life is going to be about, at least for the next foreseeable future. So advice, I don't know. It's kind of like, just go for it. But also, Jen, do go for it. You know, don't hold back in what you're doing. Be ready to fail, and be ready to fail a lot. Be ready to pick yourself up. Develop a sense of who will support you in this journey. Have a core people of that you know are going to support you, that, I don't know, there's Facebook groups for that. If somebody, you know, somebody finds out, oh God, that friend that I thought was a good friend actually isn't a good friend at all, you know, find out who are your friends. Like, set your circumstances up right. Like, set your circumstances up for success. You know, if you know you have somebody, say if it's a spouse or a friend or whoever it is that you most confide in, and you know they have a negative attitude to what you're going to do, don't include them. Just don't do it. Like, you've got to be kind of ruthless. If you want to be successful, you've got to be ruthless in a sense. Not unkind, not be an absolute prick about it, but, you know, like, be realistic and say, actually, you're not helping me in what I want to do. You can be completely kind with that. And say, sorry, this doesn't work for me. I need to think about what it is that I want in this. Yeah, so I think another advice is that I really wish that I would have kind of realized sooner as well, is that you kind of can't put yourself up to the same standard as someone who's pursuing a 9-to-5 job career has. So most likely you're going to meet with a lot of failure. You probably won't even kind of find whatever, like, it takes time to find that thing that works for you. So if you are a person who wants to, you know, be married and have a steady job, and you value the security of that more than you do creating what it is that you want to create, then don't pursue it. It's that simple. And I think, you also can't put, don't feel like a failure because you haven't achieved those things by the time you're 30. Don't feel like a failure because, you know, like, all your friends are getting married or having kids, and And just to put it out there, I also have actor friends who have artistic careers, who's making absolute, you know, they're making a great living for themselves. They have families and kids, and it can be done. I'm not saying that it can't be done, but I'm saying that it's a lot harder. And for me, that was never really a goal in the first place. Like, I am not dying to settle down and sort of have a family and do those things. My priorities are very different from that. So don't feel like a failure if you are meeting with a lot of difficulty. That's kind of like how it's supposed to be, in a sense.
It's the journey.
Absolutely, it is the journey. Now, if you're stuck within that place for years and years and years, I would probably question, like, your approach to things. So, you know, don't stay in the same place. Don't expect other people to give you opportunities. That's another thing. Like, don't have that, like, we go through the school system and we kind of go, okay, after A level, then it's university, and then somebody's going to hire me, and we sort of expect to kind of be integrated into this system. And if you want to make it a good time for yourself, don't expect that to happen. Like, you really have to learn how to look for opportunities. You have to create them yourself and stop complaining about other people not giving you opportunities. And in fact, the whole complaining about, like, your situation, like, in general, if it serves as an excuse to not go and do it, stop it. That's not to say, you know, cry when you need to, cry when it's hard, cry, or, you know, like, get it out and do that and be fully yourself. But if you're using that as an excuse to not do the things that you need to do in order to make it work, then it's something else.
Yeah, blaming other people,
yes,
for your failures. I know that at some point, yes, someone might do something that is going to make you fail, but at the end of the day, if you just spend months and months just blaming them, yeah, for what happened to you, it's not constructive. It's not creative, really.
Yeah, and I think it's also, love what you do so much, and, like, that you will find a way. It's kind of like having somebody, like, having a partner that you love, like, having that sort of soulmate relationship and going, I will do whatever it takes to make, you know, to make this happen. And I think it's sort of, you know, people sometimes say, oh, I feel so uncomfortable talking to people about my work, and I feel so, oh, I don't know how I'm coming across. And I'm like, don't care about it. Like, tell people what you're passionate about, tell people what you love, and people will listen. And I think that's the same approach as, like, if you love something, like, make it happen. Don't put up any excuse for it. Like, just find a different way. If it's not working as it is, what other options have you got? Be creative, not just in your work, but in the way that you approach your working situation. Just be in it for the long run, I guess. It's sort of, yeah, just give it your all, be in it for the long run. Don't be scared of being passionate about things. I think a lot of people, what is scary is, like, because you're kind of making a statement to the world, aren't you? Like, this is what I like, this is what I'm passionate about. And the scary thing about that is that some people won't like that at all. And maybe they don't like what you do, maybe they don't like, you know, maybe people feel threatened about it, because some people say, oh, I'm just not that talented, whatever, and just leave it at that and use it as an excuse to be lazy and not deal with their own life. You know, it's a lot of things, but yeah, just best advice, probably, develop good attitudes, develop realistic attitudes, don't expect success overnight, because you're probably going to fall on your face more times than you can ever count.
Can confirm that.
Yeah, and just get really used to sort of riding the roller coaster, get used to picking yourself up, and yes, celebrate the small victories. Those are really important. Really celebrate them, find people to celebrate them with, and yeah, don't forget to have fun. You're doing this because you're having fun, and the beginning is sucky and hard, but also fun.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also sucky and hard. It's sort of like a double-edged sword there. So
yeah, you can have really bad day where everything is just dark and gloomy and yes, nothing is going, and then the next day you have that email that you just waited for, and then everything is amazing and just, like, yeah, succeeded and everything. Yeah, I completely get that. Let's talk about your latest project, because yes, it's a super interesting project and it's really, like, current happening right now.
Yes, so With my new painting style, yeah, in January and February, I sort of set myself I signed up for an art fair and I thought, right, I don't have any originals, so I'm going to create 4 new paintings in the space of 6 weeks, which for me, using 4 months on one painting seemed a bit impossible. Anyway, I did it, and the paintings, I'm very happy with them. And people seem to really respond to them, and I was really excited about it. So my idea was then to expand that into a full-blown project with the title Extraordinary Women, Transformation and Transcendence. So what I'm doing is essentially creating a crowdfunding project for me to take 2 months off to just focus on creating 5 to 8 new paintings in this series. The way that I'm doing that is I'm working a little bit differently this time. So I am using some material that I'm interested in exploring, but I'm also putting a call out to women. So this is going to be centered around sort of women, whatever sort of identity that takes. And for people to tell me stories of inner transformation. So I've put out a public call and people have gotten back to me with like some really wonderful stories. And then I'm also reaching out to people, so working with models, and I've got a really exciting interview with a professional climber called Hazel Finley, which I'm super excited about doing. She's just look her up online, watch her YouTube videos, like you're just going to get so scared. It's kind of like watching Free Solo. The goal of this project is to create a series of images that are really moving and powerful, that have a sort of bit of a commercial appeal, but that also has explores those questions around inner transformations and around the process of whatever shape that takes.
And so you're crowdfunding for that project to be able to do all these paintings?
Yes, so crowdfunding is going to go live in the first week of June. And then I will spend a month sort of interviewing people and raising the money. And then hopefully in July and August, I will paint the actual paintings. And then there's going to be a small showing of that at King's Cross Market, hopefully the first week, weekend of September. So do come along to that.
That's awesome. That's quite a tight schedule for you.
It's a very ambitious schedule. It's very ambitious. But I'm hoping that I think I can do it. I have that good feeling of, yeah, I can definitely do this. It's going to be tight and it's going to be a bit tough, but I think it's going to be really amazing.
That's awesome. Well, guys, I will put a link to the crowdfunding as soon as it's up in the show notes so that you will have no excuse. You can go and have a look. Now, where can people find you on top of that crowdfunding?
My website, www.miahawk.co.uk. My Instagram is Mia Skyhawk. My Facebook is Mia Hawk Art. Either of those. I particularly post a lot on my Instagram, and then there will be a link to the crowdfunding on my website as well.
That's awesome. Well, guys, I hope you give it a look because it's so interesting and so exciting. And I hope I might have a catch up with you after this is done. And in the meantime, thank you so, so much for being on the podcast. And thank you, everyone, for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Pata Matis podcast. If you want more advice and inspiration, head to the website, thepartumartistinoneword.com, and don't forget to subscribe and leave a review if you enjoyed the show.